नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय खलन्नस्तं भक्तियोगं निजं च प्रादुष्कर्तुं कृष्ण चैतन्य नामा आविर्भूतस्थस्य पदारविन्दे गदां गदां लीयथां चित्तभृङ्गा Let my consciousness, which is like a honeybee, take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has just now appeared as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to teach the ancient system of devotional service to himself. This system had almost been lost due to the influence of time. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As Lord Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, Yada yada hi dharmasila glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam dharmasya tadatmanam srijam yaham. Whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharat, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. This is also the case with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in this world as a disguised incarnation of Krishna, but his appearance is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, the Mahabharata, in other Vedic scriptures. He appeared in order to teach the fallen souls in this material world. For in this age of Kali, almost everyone has become attached to fruitive and ritualistic activities and mental speculation. Consequently, there was a great need to revive the system of devotional service. The Lord himself personally came down, disguised as a devotee, so that the fallen populace might take advantage of the Lord's example. At the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna advised complete surrender unto him, promising all protection to his devotee. These babies can be moved somewhere, please. Unfortunately, people are so fallen that they cannot accept the instructions of Lord Krishna. Therefore, Krishna returned with the same mission, but he executed it in a different way. As Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he ordered us to surrender unto himself. But as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he taught us how to surrender to Krishna. Therefore, he is praised by the Goswamis, Namo Mahabhadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. Lord Sri Krishna is certainly the personality of Godhead, but he is not as magnanimous as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Krishna simply gave orders for one to become his devotee. Man mana bhavamad bhakta. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually taught the process of Krishna consciousness. If one wants to become a devotee of Lord Krishna, he must first take shelter of the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following in the footsteps of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and other exalted devotees. that my consciousness, which is like a honeybee, takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has just now appeared as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach the ancient system of devotional service to himself. This system had almost been lost due to the influence of time. This verse, composed by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and so beautifully explained by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, reveals not only the very purpose of the Lord's descent into this world, but also the ultimate hope for all humanity. First, I'll give a little background to how this verse was composed, and then we will explain from Prabhupada's purport the significance of this composition. In Sri Mayapur Dham, during our yatra in Kartik of last year, we especially focused our attention on the glorious event that took place exactly 500 years ago, when Nimai Pandit, the most successful and beloved of all the devotees in Sri Navadvipa, when Sri Sachi Nandan, the son of Mother Sachi, left his mother, his wife, his friends, his home, everything, to become a sannyasi. Yesterday, my very exalted god sister Rukmini Devi was expressing that for so many years she was not very happy about Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas. Rukmini Devi came to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet in 1968. Certainly one of the senior most devotees of our society. When she came, I think she was only about 16 years old. She's the only devotee in the whole world that comes from the same small town that I was brought up in. We probably played together as children, although we didn't know each other, because we were in the same places at the same time. But as a mother, as a wife, naturally she's feeling what Vishnupriya and Sachi Devi must have gone through. This is the nature of a devotee Paradukaduki is other people's suffering. We identify as our own suffering. And other people's happiness is our own happiness. Now, generally, we understand this, that the sufferings of the lost, conditioned souls, forgetful of Krishna, in the darkness of ignorance, we feel their sufferings, whether they're knowing their suffering or whether they think they're very happy. We feel their hearts. We feel their souls. But for advanced devotees, we also very deeply identify with the happiness and sufferings of the Nitya Siddhas, the eternally liberated souls. It's not something we talk about so much, how much we feel compassion for Yashoda and Nanda or Radharani. How many of you feel compassion toward Radharani? The great devotees do. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prayed like this. When he thinks about Srimati Radharani and Kurukshetra, after so many years of not seeing Krishna, submerged in a vast, shoreless ocean of separation, finally she meets him. But he's a prince. He's not a cowherd boy. Where is his flute? Where is the gunja mala? There's no peacock feather on his hair. There's a crown. And where are the kadamba trees and the parrots and the peacocks and the cows? Now there's elephants and chariots and soldiers. What could she do with Krishna when he's like this? All the beautiful pastimes in which she gave the highest pleasure to Krishna, and they exchanged the sweetest love. Now he was so close, but at the same time so distant. She wanted to bring him back to Vrindavan. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I want to be there in Kurukshetra, because I see the distress of Sri Radharani and I want to be there for her. So when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left home to become a sannyasi, we read about what his wife went through. She was not even 16 years old. And his mother was approaching 70. She was a widow with no one. They both lived exclusively for the pleasure of Gauranga. They had no other reason to breathe. They had nothing else. They wanted nothing else. They would accept no substitute for the service they had been given of personally assisting Lord Gauranga and giving him happiness. And imagine, he's only 24 years old, so beautiful. For him to become a sannyasi. And in those days, becoming sannyasi is not like it is sometimes today, where you go and you get Mahaprasad from people. People buy you airline tickets.
very different today. Today, grihastas take trains and sannyasis are on airplanes. Grihastas are put in some little crowd, overcrowded dharamshala, and sannyasis are put in very nice people's homes. But at the time of Mahaprabhu, sannyasis didn't wear shoes. They walked wherever they went. They slept in the forest, on the ground, on the riverbanks. How is it possible? The pain of Vishnupriya and Sachi Devi's hearts, no one could possibly fathom. According to the depth of their love, that was the depth of their pain. And because their love was limitless, their pain was limitless. All they could do was cry. So Rukmini Devi, being a mother and a wife, she's identifying, feeling what Sachi Devi, the most worshipable mother of all mothers, and Vishnupriya, the most worshipable wife of all wives, what they experienced. So brahmacharis, you already have your shaved heads, saffron. Many of you are thinking, well, someday maybe I'll take sannyas too. So you may not be able to imagine the heart of a mother or a wife, because you have no experience of that position. At least, I don't think so. But our god sister Rukmini, she has experience worrying about her child, worrying about her husband, serving, thinking of their welfare, thinking of their food, thinking of their health. How did Sachi Devi and Vishnupriya think about the food and the health of Nimai? Very difficult. When they knew he would be living in jungles and forests and begging. So therefore, it is not just some sentiment. So it's out of very deep love and respect for Sachi Mata and Vishnupriya, and identifying with their experiences. That Rukmini Devi Prabhu has expressed that I never liked this pastime of Lord Chaitanya taking sannyas. Did I represent you properly? Now she's expanding the she is now expanding the circle of her compassion. Not only Sachi Devi and Vishnupriya, but she's expressing how could she leave Srivas and Advaita and Gadadhar and Haridas? And how could she leave the beautiful kirtans in the house of Srivas Thakur? And how could he leave Navadvip, where there were millions of people who had
surrender their lives unconditionally to his divine service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha Bhavadhuti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam. That Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, who has come to taste the sweetness of Sri Radha's love. And engrossed in that consciousness has manifest Sri Radharani's own golden complexion. Krishna himself, who is Rasa Bihari, not only is he Rasa Bihari, but he's also Gopinath. It's also Radhanath. He's the Lord of Gopis, he's the Lord of Radha. And in their loving association, he's experiencing the highest pleasures of divine loving pastimes. We read the words of Shukadeva Goswami. How Lord Krishna, on that moonlit night in the autumn season, he played bamsi, his small flute, the fifth note, and the love of his heart flowed through his lips into the bamboo, through the holes, permeated the airways of Vrindavan, and especially were directed right into the ears of the gopis. Now, that flute sound was everywhere, but the gopis were tuned in. Yes? Just like a television airwaves are everywhere. But if you're tuned in, they come right in, and you get the whole picture. So the gopis were so tuned in to Krishna by their love, by their lolyam, by their eagerness to be with Krishna, their eagerness to serve and to please Krishna. It was so deep, it was so intense, that when that sound vibration of Krishna entered into their ears, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains, it went through their ears deep into their hearts, and they couldn't hear anything else. They couldn't think of anything else. And they could feel Krishna's intention. Because Krishna is absolute. Through the sound of the flute, Krishna's innermost heart's intention is he was calling them to Bamsivat. On the bank of the Yamuna. So immediately, without considering any type of material situation, they left. They didn't make even any arrangements to leave. Some were boiling milk on a fire made of cow dung. Now, it would only take a few seconds to just take that pot off the fire and save the milk from boiling over. But they didn't have time. Krishna was calling. They left. Some were feeding babies Now, they could have just, you know, fed their babies in a minute or so and then left. But they just left their babies sitting there. And they were gone. Some, they were serving dinner to their fathers or their mothers or their father-in-laws or mother-in-laws, and some to their husbands. Well, they could have made some excuse. I'm not feeling well, you know. Or they could have fed them quickly. But they didn't say a word to anyone. They just left. Because Krishna was calling. And they were so receptive. It's like when the heart, the heart is compared like a field. And love of God is like the seed. And when the heart is very, very fertile, the field is very fertile, then put a little water on the seed and it very quickly grows. But if the heart is hard, if the field is hard and unfertile, then you can put so much water and the seed, you know, somehow struggles to take root and it very slowly grows. So this Krishna's flute, the incentive, Utibana, it just stimulated, and their hearts were so absolutely soft with ecstatic love that the seed of their aspiration to serve Krishna, to please Krishna, instantly the sound of the flute just made it into a formidable desire tree. Sarvadharman puritya mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha ishami masucha. Krishna culminates the teachings of Bhagavad Gita with this verse. Abandon all varieties of dharma or even religion and just surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught that the most concentrated, the purest, and the highest expression of surrender to God was manifested by the gopis of Vrindavan. We read about what the gopis did, the risks they took, the defamation they were willing to tolerate. By leaving, that means their reputations could be gone forever. Their security and stability could be gone forever. They may be for the rest of their lives homeless. They were taking big chance. But for Krishna's pleasure, Krishna's calling, there was no consideration. But more than that is internally. It was the purity, the willingness and the eagerness of the gopis to please Krishna due to love that is the expression of the highest surrender. They didn't walk, they ran through the forests at night. Whether there was tigers, whether there was panthers, whether there was snakes, was not a consideration. And then Krishna, when they arrived, he welcomed them, thanked them for coming,
Now you have seen the beautiful moonlit forest of Vrindavan, and we have met, so now go home. And gopis were crying, you're sending us home? What is home? Wherever you are, that is our home. You're talking about our loved ones? Well, it's only due to your presence in their heart that they're even alive. You're the ultimate origin of all love, and you're the ultimate object of all love. Whatever anyone loves in somebody else, it's only because they're a part and parcel of Krishna that anyone is lovable. This is a humbling conception. Sometimes people think we're nice. Somebody might even love us. But a devotee, even when we're praised, even when we're appreciated, even if we're loved, it humbles us. Because we understand they don't actually love me. They're not glorifying me. They're not praising me. Because I'm nothing but a dead corpse, and nobody cares about a dead corpse. Even your own mother and father, or your own children, or your own husband, or your own wife, they're going to put you on a fire and burn you to ashes as soon as the soul leaves the body. So it's the soul that people love, knowingly or unknowingly. And why is the soul lovable? Mamaivamso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. Because it's part and parcel of Krishna, who is supremely lovable. So we see how people can become so obsessed, infatuated, overwhelmed with affection for someone in this world, whether it be their child or their parents or their lover or their friend. Now just imagine this. That living being is like a single ray of the sun emanating from the sun. If that single little spark of a ray could induce such intense love from our hearts, imagine how the sun planet, which is unlimitedly greater than that little ray, how that Krishna can attract our hearts. Well, sometimes when people read about gopis leaving for the forest, we think about what it would be like to meet my lover in the forest, or the person I wish was my lover in the forest. But that has nothing to do with this pastime. Because the love of the gopis is unlimited. Because Krishna's all attractive qualities is unlimited. So what was going on in their hearts when Krishna told them, go home? He was rejecting them. And then ultimately, before he really danced with them, he disappeared. He left. And the Gopi Gita, which is within the five chapters of the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto describing Ras Lila, the gopis were composing the most beautiful prayers of love and separation from Krishna. He left the Rasa dance to be with Sri Radha, and then he left Radha. And in Vrindavan, it is described that Srimati Radharani went to one place, and in her separation from Krishna, she was weeping, she was crying. And she filled a small lake with those tears. And sometime later, Lord Shiva, Ishwara, who was like the supreme male personality, yes? People who are very rough people sometimes worship Lord Shiva. If you go to Kumbh Mela and you see the Nagababas and some of those people with their tridents and their snakes and their very tough sadhus. They're not at all trying to be gopis. It's not their mood. They're like the ultimate males. They want to be the conquerors of creation. Well, Lord Shiva is their worshipable Lord. But Lord Shiva, what was his highest, most intimate, heartfelt prayer? He wanted to be a gopi. He wanted to be a part of this Rasleela. So he went to other gopis and they told him, well, you know, you are Ishwara. You have to be an Ishwari. Krishna is the only male. Even Lakshmi Devi was not allowed in the Rasleela because she was identifying herself as a queen. At Balvan, she went there to perform tapasya, to enter Rasleela, to cross over the Yamuna. She was told by gopis that you have to give up your Queen of Vaikuntha feeling, identity. Lakshmi's blessing everyone with spiritual wealth. She's the goddess of fortune. You have to take the dung of cows and mix it with straw and make it into patties, and then pile it up in a straw basket and put it on your head. And you have to do cooking for the gopas. And you have to clean their houses. Very difficult for her to identify with that. So she couldn't enter the Rasleela. Because of her tapasya, she could see it from across the Yamuna. So what to speak of Lord Shiva entering the Rasleela? You can only, if you become a gopi. But he was willing to become a gopi. And they told him, there is this Mansarovar filled with the tears of separation of Srimati Radharani. The tears that flowed from her eyes in separation from Krishna are so powerful. If you bathe in those tears, you will become a gopi. So Lord Shiva crossed the Yamuna, and he bathed in Mansarovar, and he came out. He went in as Ishwara, and he came out of that lake as Gopeshwara, Mahadev. And he was given the position of the guardian of the Rasleela. Even among gopis, no one could enter without his blessing. So Krishna, in his Vrindavan Leela, he revealed these two exchanges of divine love, Sambhog and Vipralamba, love in meeting and love in separation. And in Vrindavan Lila, the love and separation has great prominence, because Krishna only stayed in Vrindavan for hardly 11 years. During his earthly Leela, and then for over 100 years, he was either in Mathura or Dwarka. Now, why didn't the Brijavasis just move to Dwarka? Yes, that's what we would probably do, wouldn't we? If Krishna's living in Dwarka for 100 years, almost, and he doesn't come back to visit us, and we're dying in separation, you just pack up, you know, they... From Mahaban, when there was difficulties for Krishna, they moved to Vrindavan, they moved to Chatikar, they moved to Nandagaon, Barasana, they moved so many times. So why didn't they move to Mathura? Mathura is not that far. Yes? In fact, you know, I don't know how the lotus was opening and closing in those days, 5,000 years ago, but as far as today, it's closer to go from Gokul to Mathura than it is to Nandagram. Yes? Krishna was in Mathura. And they never went there. Nanda and some of the gopas went there for the wrestling match, but then they never went back. The reason? Because their love for Krishna was so pure and so deep that they lived for the intent of Krishna. This is bhakti. In our love, we dedicate ourselves to fulfill the intent of the beloved. And that is our intent. Sometimes we say this, but this is an extremely deep philosophical concept. Some philosophers, the monists, they want to become one with God. The idea is they lose their individuality and they merge into the all-pervading light of Brahman. For a Vaishnav, there's an even deeper, more ecstatic form of merging and becoming one. And what is that? To become absolutely undifferentiatedly one with the intent of Krishna. That means our intent and Krishna's intent are non-different. Whatever Krishna's desire is, our desire is one with that. That is Vrindavan. Krishna feels the greatest pleasure in Vrindavan. And therefore he didn't want his devotees to leave Vrindavan. This is revealed by Srila Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Where they are, Krishna's telling his intimate devotees, Narada Muni and Uddhava, and even his queens, Satyabhama and Rukmini, I could have gone back to Vrindavan. The reality is,
The only thing that attracts me about all my queens in Dwarka is a little bit you resemble the gopis of Vrindavan. And how much he loved the queens of Dwarka. So we could imagine the love for the gopis of Vrindavan. But in their separation from me, they're experiencing the highest union with me. This is the science of Vipralamba. When one is personally with their beloved, the love of their heart goes out toward them. But in separation, in the pain of separation from our beloved, the love of the heart goes deeper and deeper and deeper internally. Now, in this world separation, it goes deeper and deeper internally, but our lover is not there. Only the thought of our lover is there. But Krishna, he's the Paramatma in every heart. And for his pure devotees, for the residents of Vrindavan, he doesn't appear as a four-armed Paramatma. The Paramatma in their heart is manifesting as Bhagavan, as Shamsundar, as Gopijana Vallabha, as Nandanandana, Yashodanandana. And Krishna is personally tasting the sweetness of that love from within and reciprocating with his love. And because Krishna is reciprocating fully this great mystery, how could pain cause ecstasy? The gopi's pain of love without Krishna is being accepted by Krishna and being reciprocated with Krishna, and therefore it, to the degree the pain is there, to that degree they're feeling the highest ecstasy. Now on the material platform, pain and ecstasy are contradictory. Yes? But Krishna, he has achintya shakti, inconceivable potencies. In fact, these mysteries cannot be understood through logic, simply by studying of scripture, by performing austerities, by doing sadhana, can only be understood by the mercy of Krishna. Because it's so deep, it's so profound, and it's the highest of all spiritual revelations. Love and separation. So don't be surprised if people can't understand it when you try to explain it to them on the trains in Bombay. One has to be showered with the mercy of Krishna, coming through the mercy of Vaishnavas, to really grasp even a trace of what this really is about. It is profound. They miss Krishna so much. That love goes so deep into their heart, and Krishna's right there, accepting that love and fully reciprocating by giving his love. They feel the most intimate union in separation. And Krishna tells his devotees in Dwarka, it doesn't get any deeper or better than that. How gopis and myself are, how the residents of Vrindavan and myself, Krishna says, how we are exchanging love in separation. How we are united in separation. greatest ecstasy. And if I were to go back, then you would all die. So I can't do that. And if I go back, and if I tell them I'll be back in a few days, that's what I told them before, then they would all die. When Srimati Radharani was being given the message by Uddhava in Uddhav Kyari near Nandagaon, she was speaking her heart. That why does Krishna left us after we gave up everything for him? Krishna told the gopis on that Sarat Purnima that the surrender and the love in your hearts has conquered me. I cannot repay you. With everything I have and everything I am, even an entire lifetime of Brahma, I cannot repay you for your devotion to me. So please just be satisfied with that devotion, because I'm powerless. I'm a debtor. Sarvaloka Maheshwara. Krishna is the proprietor of everything that exists. Everyone's in debt to Krishna. Every time we take a breath, we're indebted to Krishna. The government, the scientists, the industrialists, they're not creating air. Yes, they can't. No one can. Krishna's providing. Now, if somebody saves your life, are you indebted to them? Well, without air, we die. Yes? Every time you breathe, Krishna's saving your life. And yet, people don't even believe he exists. And even if they believe he exists, what are you going to give me, Krishna? Why you're not giving? Why this? Why that? I want this. We are eternally in debt to Krishna on every level. Every morsel of food, every breath is the grace of Krishna. Bhakti means understanding our debt to Krishna and wanting to give back to him. How do we give back? Srila Prabhupada explains the Ganges River, Ganga Devi, is unlimited volume of water is flowing from Gangotri to Ganga Sagara. Yet if we take a palmful of water and offer it with devotion, Ganga accepts it. Patram pushpam palam toyam. We're taking from her and giving back, but because we're doing it in a spirit of gratitude and affection, Ganga accepts it. So similarly, Krishna's giving us everything if we just take that and offer it back, what he gives to us. Our life is perfect. Krishna gives us himself. But the extent of the gopis' love, Krishna tells, even in an entire lifetime of Brahma, I can never repay you with all that I have and all that I am. Lord Chaitanya told his devotees in that same mood as Krishna talking to gopis, that I am forever a prisoner in your heart. That is how prema conquers God, by his sweet will. And the six Goswamis, they were teaching the highest principles of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's gift to the world. And Srila Prabhupada explains, we do not see so much the Goswamis talking about, I saw Krishna last night. He was in my closet. And he was playing with toys. Hey Radhe, Braja Deva Ke Chalalite. They were in moods of separation. Is Krishna, where is Krishna? Is he at the Yamuna? Is he at Govardhan? Is he at Bamsivat? So the residents of Vrindavan never left Vrindavan because they knew that Krishna wanted them to remain there. And Srimati Radharani, in the presence of Uddhava, she was, Krishna left, and because he left, this body is like a house, and now there's a blazing fire burning in separation. It's just burning and burning and burning. And my very soul is like one of the little animals in that house. When the little animal of the soul leaves the body, you're dead. Yes? She wants to leave the body. She wants to give up her life, because how could she live without Krishna? But she can't, because Krishna promised, before he left with Akrura, he promised, I will return. And that promise, I will return, was like a strong bolt that locked the door of the house and would not let the little animal, the pet of Krishna's little animal in her heart, escape. So she just continued to burn and burn and burn and burn while still alive. Now, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why did he descend to this world? Krishna, seeing this love of Srimati Radharani, seeing this love of the residents of Vrindavan, he understood that it is an ecstasy that even I cannot experience. Krishna is the ashray vigraha. That means he's the object of love. I'm sorry, he's the vishay vigraha. He's the object of love. But the devotee is the ashray vigraha. That means the abode of love. And of all devotees, Sri Radharani is the supreme, complete crescendo of all perfection of love. All love is ultimately emanating from her heart. And Krishna, what is the happiness she feels when she sees me? Even I cannot fathom that. What is it about me that awakens such ecstasies in her? When she sees the color of a tamal tree, she just starts embracing, thinking it's me. When the scent of my body enters into the air and she smells it, she practically flies right into the wind. in separation. So in order to taste the sweetness of his own devotee's love, specifically the love of Srimati Radharani, Krishna appears within this world as Lord Chaitanya. There is the story at Imli Tal, where Krishna, after Sri Radharani left Rasa Leela, he sat under this tree. In separation of Srimati Radharani, he became so absorbed, he took on a golden complexion. And when Srimati Radharani saw him, she wondered, what is this? And he revealed that I was so absorbed in you, I began to taste the sweetness of your love for me. And I will descend in the age of Kali with the same golden complexion, with the same love that I began to taste here, not only to taste your love, but to distribute it to the whole world through the congregational chanting of your holy name. So Krishna appeared with the Mahabhava and the compassion of Srimati Radharani. And when he came to Vrindavan, he sat under the same Imlital tree. And in the pangs of separation from Krishna, Mahaprabhu's body turned sham, turned bluish, like a newly formed monsoon rain cloud, in that absorption in remembrance of Krishna, in separation, as he chanted the holy names. And through the chanting of the holy names, he wanted to share this greatest of all gifts with everyone. Recently, I was in New York City, and I was brought by some of our dear friends to upstate New York for a very nice program. And one person asked, something that so many people don't like. Why did Ram banish Sita? She didn't do anything wrong. She was the absolutely perfect devotee. Just because some washerman person was chastising his wife and criticizing something, what's that a reason to banish your wife when she's pregnant? And Sita. Especially ladies sometimes have a really hard time with that part of the Ramayana. I've met many ladies, even in India, they stop before that part of Ramayana comes. Why does it come at the end? Usually the end is like a dessert. You know, the best part is the end, the sweetest part. But this is the bitterest, most inconceivable and painful part at the very end. But actually it's the sweetest part. Because Ram was living in Ayodhya with Sita Devi. But out of his intense love, he wanted Sita to experience the same ecstasy as the gopis in Vrindavan, in separation.
And he wanted to experience that same ecstasy of love with Sita. And this all makes sense only when we understand that Krishna is present personally, directly, to receive our love in separation from within. Why did Ram banish Sita? Only physically it was like that. But spiritually, Ram never banished Sita. Ram is a prisoner in the heart of Sita. He cannot, for any way, with all of his powers, the Lord could become Virat Rupa, the universal form. But with all the powers of God, he cannot escape the love of his devotee. He's conquered. So when she went to Valmiki Muni's ashram, Sri Ramchandra was right there in her heart. And all of those feelings of deep separation, all of those tears, he was not only tasting them, but he was embracing them. And he was giving her his own love and the highest ecstasies in that feeling. So from this perspective, Ram's banishment of Sita is something very beautiful. The highest union was experienced then. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came to taste the sweetness of Radha's love, especially her love in separation, by his own free will. The last years of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, the last 12 years, was spent in Gambira, where he practically did nothing else except taste the sweetness of Radha's love in separation from Krishna. Practically 24 hours a day he was crying in separation from Krishna. Was that pain? Yes. Was it ecstasy? Yes. Was it really pain? No. It's just the most intimate variety of ecstasy. Overwhelming, drowning in the experience of Krishna's presence in those feelings of separation. And the manifestations of Lord Chaitanya's love in the Gambira, the world has never seen. And during the Rath Yatra, he would bring all his devotees, not all, but so many of his devotees, from Orissa, from Bengal. And the Rath Yatra, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is a parade of love and separation. It is described when he was in Gambira, Lord Chaitanya was experiencing the same feelings of separation as Radharani when Uddhava came with the message of Krishna from Mathura. And during the Rath Yatra, he was experiencing that same separation as Radharani in Kurukshetra. And that's what, for Mahaprabhu, this is what Rath Yatra is, bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan. Gundicha. So this is internally what he descended for. Mahaprabhu had three internal reasons and three external reasons for coming to this world.
internally, he came to experience Sri Radha's love and separation. And he did it in Gambhira for 12 continuous years. And he manifested mostly in Navadvip. After he came back from Gaya, this was his experience. Where is Krishna? In Kanainatashala, I saw Krishna. All my life, I wasted in the vain pursuits of mundane scholarship. And by the inconceivable mercy of Krishna and the grace of my guru, I saw Krishna. And I ran toward him. But then he disappeared. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? This was the mood he returned to Navadvip after his initiation. It was a mood of separation. Where is Krishna? Satchimata didn't know what to do with her son. He was always crying, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? She approached Srivas Thakur. She first started going to all these townspeople. What, my son, he's just crying. Where is Krishna all the time? What do I do with him? I don't know what to do. And they said, he has some problem. So she went to some mystical doctor and he said, he has a disorder of his heirs. And that's causing him to be mentally unbalanced. So you should get a pot of Vishnu oil. And you should put him in the Vishnu oil to soak in that. And that will help balance his life errors, and then his mind will become more stable. So he, you know, his mother. But in the Vishnu oil, he was getting even worse. So Satchimata was going around, and finally she went to Srivas Thakur, and she said, what, my son, I don't understand. He's never been like this. He's just always, where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? He's crying. It's pathetic the way he's crying. It breaks my heart. I can't bear it. So she brought Srivas. And Lord Chaitanya saw Srivas and said, is my life errors disturbed? Is this due to some disease? And Srivas said, I want that disease. This is the highest ecstasy of love of God in separation. And he told Srivas, this disease is what the ultimate goal of life is, an ecstasy. His love, his prema. The world has never seen such high spiritual realization. He told Sachi Devi, don't go asking advice of any of these foolish people anymore. What your son has is what every living entity longs to achieve. So see, as soon as he took initiation, love and separation. He was feeling it. The Lord's mercy is he wants to share the highest gift with his devotees. So Mahaprabhu's taking sannyas. It's a very deep and long subject. And also had its external and internal reasons. The external reasons for Mahaprabhu's descent was to fulfill the prophecy of Bhagavad Gita. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. That age after age I will descend to deliver the fallen souls and reestablish true religious principles. And as the Yuga Avatar, he comes specifically to deliver all the fallen souls through establishing the congregational chanting of the holy names. And also because Sri Advaitacharya, the crest jewel of all devotees, he was praying. He
He was crying. He was fasting out of compassion for us. In this age of Kali, people are so mixed up, so deluded by material ego, even in the name of religion, people have no real sense of what is prema bhakti. Advaitacharya was crying and weeping, seeing the poison of Kali's influence spreading in all directions. Srimad Bhagavatam explains the eighth canto that there is no greater service that pleases Krishna more than accepting difficulties to show compassion to those who are suffering. That's the highest service within this world. And it was spoken in reference to Lord Shiva. While churning the ocean of milk with the idea of getting nectar, this poison, unlimited quantities of poison started pouring out of the ocean and spreading in all directions. It began to fill the entire universe, and it was about to exterminate all life. Now, what to do with this? This poison, picture it. You may have been around in those days. This deadly poison, the most deadly of all deadly poisons, it's literally like a monsoon rain. It's flooding everywhere. Not only in Bombay, but the entire universe. It's just filling it up. And it keeps growing and growing and growing and growing. What do you do? And it's growing very fast. The demigods were helpless. So they, along with Vishnu, they all went to Kailash to meet Lord Shiva. And he saw the situation. And they honored him because he's a manifestation of Krishna. Prabhupada in the purport explains that Krishna is transcendental, but when Krishna enters into the material world, he becomes Shiva. He takes on qualities for the purpose of his service within this material world, for the purpose of the creation, maintenance, dissolution of the cosmic manifestation. So because that poison was everywhere, how to drink it? But by his yogic powers, he concentrated an ocean of poison into what fit in the palm of his hand. Can you imagine the potency of that? And then, taking permission of Parvati, it's a good lesson. Lord Shiva asked permission from Parvati. Such respect between husband and wife. He wouldn't do it without her permission. And she knew the power and the mercy of her husband, so she gave permission. Then he drank it, and his throat became black. Kalakanta. And devotees see that as a great ornament. So this compassion is the highest service, the highest expression of love to God, is this feeling of compassion for those who are suffering.
Now, Sri Advaita Acharya is incarnation of both Karunodakshayi Vishnu and Sadashiva, the original Shiva of the spiritual world. So he came to this world in the mood of Lord Shiva. He saw the poison of Kali Yuga spreading in all directions, worse and worse and worse. And he felt such compassion that he fasted and he performed his puja, loudly crying Krishna's names with tears. Krishna, only you could save them. Only you could deal with this horrible situation of Kali Yuga. Please come and deliver them. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, and he said it again and again, I came to this world simply because Advaitacharya called me. Which is a great lesson, because unless a devotee prays for us, we cannot connect to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada saw this ocean of poison, and on behalf of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Advaitacharya, and his Gurudev, he crossed the ocean of Atlantic Ocean and the Arabian Sea, and crossed three continents on Jaladuta. In the same spirit, to save people from the sufferings of the poison of egoism and greed and lust and anger and envy. By spreading the glories of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's mercy through the chanting of the holy name. Mahaprabhu came to taste internally. Externally, he came to give love of God. Internally, he came to taste the sweetness of the purest love and to share, distribute Radharani's love with the whole world. That is Mahaprabhu. So when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas for the purpose of distributing that love, which he was sharing with his most intimate devotees in Srivasangam during kirtan, and he was sharing that most intimate love at home with Sachimata and Vishnupriya, he wanted to share that same love with the whole world. He wanted to travel unrestrictedly, free. And so many people were criticizing him because he was a grihastha, a householder. People were thinking, he's just like us. What's so great about him? And they were chastising him. They were making conspiracies to punish him. So the Lord was thinking, if I take sannyas, the same people who want to punish me will bow down to me. And simply by bowing down to me, they will be delivered. Because he's the Supreme Lord. When he heard all these conspiracies and these criticisms and blasphemies against him by these materialistic people, these egoistic smartas, he told his devotees, I came with the medicine, Pipalikanda, which is meant to reduce the disease of the mucus within the body, but I find that the medicine is increasing it. And the devotees, what does that mean? But Nityananda Prabhu could sense what it meant. Because Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya's heart were one. One and the same, Krishna and Balaram.
And then Lord revealed, I will cut my hair, put on the saffron robes, and with a danda and a begging pot, I will travel the world as a sannyasi. So what he did when he left Vishnupriya and he left Sachidevi, he didn't leave them. He was more with them than ever before in their hearts, because they were more absorbed in him than ever before in their hearts in separation. So the same thing he came to taste in the Gambira, he shared it with his devotees. Love in separation. It wasn't cruel. It was the ultimate kindness, the ultimate reciprocation. So we must understand it in this spirit. It wasn't hard-heartedness towards Sachi and Vishnupriya and the devotees. It was actually the most generous gesture of inconceivable affection by sharing with them what he was yearning for, to taste that Vipralamba Prem. Rukmini Devi is a motherly heart may not be able to adjust all of these ideas, but what is your opinion? Can we give microphone? Wait. Can you? All these electrical engineer graduates. When they come before Radha Gopinath, they are humbled. Everyone simply laughs at them. No one can hear.
Maharaj, my opinion is that was the best class I've ever heard in my whole life. So thank you so much.
You say that to everyone. That's the nature of a mother. That means you have accepted me as your own child. Thank you. Very well. Yesterday in car on the way to Namamrita and Keshav Prabhu's house, I told Rukmini Devi I'm doing some other project and I've had absolutely no time to think about what is this Gaur Purnima festival. So tell me what I should speak on. And then she began to explain her motherly views of Mahaprabhu Sannyas. So it was because of that that I found something to speak on. Thank you very much. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, on that day of Makara Sankranti, all the devotees, he spontaneously, from within their hearts, attracted all of them to come and meet him.
And only Nityananda Prabhu, Gadadhar, Mukunda, Chandrasekharacharya, and a couple others knew that he was leaving that night. All the others, because he was having such beautiful kirtans with them and he was reciprocating so profusely with them, they kind of forgot all this sannyas subject matters. They were just happy. So they all came to his house and each one gave him a garland. And he took off his garland after wearing it, and everyone who gave him a garland, he gave them a garland. They came and put chandan on his body. And he took that mahaprasad of chandan and he personally put it on their bodies. They gave him gifts. He gave them gifts. It was such a sweet, intimate exchange. And he gave them all the same instructions. Whatever you're doing, whether you're sleeping or whether you're walking or whether you're eating or working or with your family or with your friends or whether you're alone, always chant the names of Krishna. Don't let a single precious moment of life pass in forgetfulness of Krishna's names. Krishna is your real wealth. Krishna is your life and your soul. And as you are chanting Hare Krishna, we are always together. Srila Prabhupada gave the same instruction at a very critical time. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was telling this to them when knowing that in just that same night he was going to leave Navadvip forever to become a sannyasi. Chant the names of Krishna and we will always be together. Early in the movement, Srila Prabhupada, his health was very ill. And they tried to treat him by bringing him to nice places in America, but it kept going down. The movement was only about 2 years old then. And he told the devotees that I will go back to India, to Vrindavan. And either I will die in Vrindavan or I will get better in Vrindavan. But because his health kept going down, 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 the devotees didn't know what to do. And he was about to depart. The devotees were crying. Can you imagine? They gave their lives. They were practically with him constantly. There was only about two centers, San Francisco and New York. And he was in either one of those two places. And devotees in New York would go to San Francisco, and they were always with Prabhupada. Either if they weren't with him personally, they were getting letters from him every few days. And that's how they were surviving. And now he's about to leave. And he may never return. It was devastating. And Prabhupada gave the same instruction. He said, if you are chanting Hare Krishna and I am chanting Hare Krishna, we are always together. On the spiritual platform, neither time nor any geographical limitations can separate the disciple from the guru or from the soul from God. And it is the holy names that is that connecting point that brings our souls together. So Mahaprabhu was giving them this instruction and they were so happy. It was just blissful. He's giving us gifts. He's smiling at us. He's embracing us. He's giving us these wonderful instructions. And they all went home jubilantly, not knowing what was going to happen that night. And the last person to come was Kulavecha Sridhar, quite late at night, with a single pumpkin that grew on his roof, straw roof. Pumpkins are very transcendent, pumpkins are amazing. I remember years ago as a devotee, I was milking cows and taking care of a garden. And where I was gardening, it was really difficult for anything to grow. It was so much effort because deers were coming and eating it and insects were eating it and the ground was not fertile. And, you know, just somehow or other trying to get something to grow in the garden. Very difficult. But then there was, do you know what compost is? It's like organic garbage. Yes, organic trash. You just throw it in one place. From the place where this trash was, you know, like, you know, the peels of potatoes, if you don't eat those peels, or the shells, you throw it. Or people who eat and then they don't finish, you just throw it there. This is the garbage place. And the most beautiful pumpkins would grow out of that garbage heap regularly. And more pumpkins were growing out of the garbage heap than practically the vegetables in the garden. And the amazing thing is no one planted the pumpkins in the garbage. We didn't water them. We didn't kill the insects on them. We didn't do anything. They just came. So pumpkins are very special. And on Kulavecha Sridhar's thatched roof, we don't see papayas or mangoes or eggplants growing, but pumpkin. Because pumpkins are very, they're like a rebellious vegetable. They're very independent-minded. So Kulavecha Sridhar brought this pumpkin. And Mahaprabhu was thinking, I'm going to leave home tonight and never come back. And now Kulavecha Sridhar is giving this pumpkin and it's late at night. And I've been stealing his bananas and his leaves and everything. I've been stealing all for so many years. I'm taking, giving nothing back. And yet, here it is, my last night here, and he's coming to give me something else. The story of Kulavecha Sridhar is the story of unconditional, unmotivated, loving service. So many people, they worship God because they want something from God. Give me a wife, give me a husband, give me money, give me a higher position, give me good health, give me a nice house, give me a nice car, give me good clothes, give me good education, help me pass my exams. So many things we want to take from God. But Kulavecha Sridhar His whole life was God taking from him. And it was critical taking, because he was taking practically everything he had, because he had so little. Yes, it is said God doesn't just see what you give, he sees what you hold back. He was practically every day putting Kolaveitcha Sridhar in bankruptcy. Not exactly technically, but he only had a few bananas and flowers and leaves to sell, and Mahaprabhu Nimai would just come and take it. He would argue and argue and argue. And finally, when he revealed himself as the Supreme Personality of Godhead during the Mahaprakash Lila, he reveals this darshan that's on our wall here of Krishna and Balaram to Kolaveitcha Sridhar. He revealed himself as Krishna Balaram and the gopis and the gopas and the cows and the Yamuna and the beautiful trees of Vrindavan and the birds and the peacocks. He had a darshan of Vrindavan Dham. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sridhar, I want to give you benediction, ask anything. He offered him the eight mystic cities, he offered him liberation, he offered him elevation to the spiritual world, he offered him a kingdom and wonderful prosperity. And Sridhar refused everything. Even when the Lord was begging him to accept, he refused. He was emaciated due to hunger. He lived in a thatched hut. His only possession was an old beaten-up iron pot to carry water. But he wouldn't... You come and steal from me, but I don't want anything from you. It's beautiful. This is Vrindavan. Krishna's Makanchor. He comes to the gopis' house to steal from them. And they would complain to Yashoda all the different methods in which Krishna would steal butter, yogurt, ghee, milk. And Yashoda Mai said, then I will, somehow or other, I will tie up Krishna and keep him home. And then, no, 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 don't do that, please. Their life was only the prayer and the hope that Krishna would come and steal their butter. Because when they would prepare that butter, they would put all their love and their heart in that butter, hoping Krishna would come and steal it. And it was that love that he was stealing. In stealing the butter, he was stealing their hearts. Hari. So in that similar mood, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he would steal Kolaveitcha Sridhar's bananas. And if Nimai was late, Kolaveitcha Sridhar would be looking down the road. Where is he? Where is he? Where is he? He would be in so much anticipation. Will Nimai come and steal my bananas today? Will he argue with me and chastise me? Where is he? That was his life. Mahaprabhu, all of his meals, whatever Sachimata cooked, he especially wanted it served on the leaves, the banana leaves that Kolaveitcha Sridhar would supply. Giving, 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 and accepting nothing in return. And finally, when Mahaprabhu insisted to Sridhar, take something, Sridhar only asked for that. Birth after birth, in whatever situation, in my heart of hearts, let me always remember this beautiful form of your Nimai. And always come and steal my bananas. That's all he wanted, to give. And now he's giving at the last part of his last day. What am I going to do with this banana? And by his own mystic potency, just by his desire, one more person came into the house with a little pot of milk.
And Lord Gauranga told Sachi, make banana and milk preparation. And she made it. And that was his last supper. Such sweet love. And everyone was jubilant that night as they took rest. But Sachimata, she could feel in her heart that it will happen. And she stood at the door all night. And Nimai got up from his bed. And there he found Sachi at the door. She was weeping, crying, brokenhearted. He touched her feet, circumambulated her, and was gone. With great speed, he went to the bank of the Ganga. He jumped in the Ganga. He swam across the river and then walked like a maddened lion about 25 miles to Katwa. In Mayapur Dham, we explained this story in some detail. Like any other morning, all the devotees, first thing, they came to Nimai's house to greet him. But unlike any other morning, they saw Sachi Devi outside the house, in utter despair. What are you doing outside, covered with dust, weeping? What is it, Sachi Devi? She couldn't speak, but she had to speak. She said, "This house, it now belongs to you. I have nothing left, because my Nimai has left to take sannyas." She collapsed. All the devotees collapsed. Advaitacharya, he collapsed. He said, Nimai's gone. Gauranga is gone forever. We may never see him again. I cannot live. I will give up my life. I will enter into the Ganga and never come out. And if anyone tries to stop me, then I'll do it at night when nobody's around. But all the devotees were feeling exactly the same way. Not only were they not going to stop him, they were going to go with him. Now please understand, this is the intensity of their feelings. And as they all had decided to enter into the Ganga, there was a voice that could be heard by all. Please be patient. In 2 or 4 days, Nimai will be with you again, dancing and chanting. Just be patient. So out of love for Sachimata, they gathered around her in a circle and just discussed the pastimes of Lord Gauranga and chanted the holy names. See the... What can you say when Vedic mantras are chanted? This is a very, if some ring or some disco sound comes out of cell phones, then there's some justified reason for becoming annoyed. But devotees are so expert. They have Prabhupada singing. or some Vedic mantras chanting. And then who can say, you can't say, you know, it's, why are you disturbing class? It's better than the class. So just see the devotees. Their own hearts were absolutely devastated by Mahaprabhu's departure. But yet, their main concern was Sachi Devi and Vishnupriya. They weren't focusing on their own their own unbearable agony of never seeing the Lord of their life again. But they gathered around Sachi Devi to keep her alive. And how the gopas and the gopis remained alive in Krishna's absence, because he made a promise he would come back. And that's exactly what kept all the devotees in Navadvipa alive. That voice said that Mahaprabhu would come back. And meanwhile, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he met Keshav Bharati and convinced him to give him sannyas, even against all opposition by the whole town of Katwa. And they brought the barber, who with great difficulty cut the beautiful hair of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then Lord Chaitanya bathed in the Ganga, put on his saffron robes, and said to his guru, "I had a dream where a divine saintly person gave me this mantra." And then he whispered that mantra in the ear of his guru and said, "Please tell me if you think this is a good mantra." Now what actually happened there is Lord Chaitanya just initiated his guru. Because he's God, he can do that. God can initiate his guru. Nobody else could do that. And when his guru heard this mantra, he was struck with wonder. And he said, "This is the best of all mantras." And then he went to Lord Chaitanya's ear and repeated the same mantra. And then he wondered, "What name can I give him? According to tradition, my name is Keshav Bharati. So it's the Bharati Sampradaya of sannyas, so I should be giving him the name Bharati. But how could I name the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, after me? I can't do that. What name could possibly be given to him?" I mean, really, put yourself in Keshav Bharati Maharaja's position. What name are you going to give Lord Gauranga? So then the Lord spoke to him from within his heart. Saraswati manifested on his tongue. And he said, "Because you have come to give Chaitanya of Krishna consciousness to the whole world by the chanting of the holy names, your name will be Sri Krishna Chaitanya." And in this way, the Lord's name manifested within this world. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chandrasekhar Acharya, we described in Mayapur. That was really ecstatically pathetic. Because Chandrasekhar Acharya is Mahaprabhu's uncle. And in traditional Indian family, the uncle is as good as the father.
Sachimata's younger sister, Malini, or what was her name again? I'm sorry. But the younger sister of Sachimata was married to Chandrasekhar. After Jagannath Mishra left the world, it was Chandrasekhar more than anyone who was taking care of Sachi Devi, his sister-in-law. And now the Lord was going to take sannyas and make beloved Sachi a widow. And the Lord's pastimes of Nam Kirtan were held in two places, primarily Srivasangam and Chandrasekhar Bhavan, the house of Chandrasekhar. He was leaving forever. It was the ultimate personal loss to Chandrasekhar. His own nephew, who he loved more dear than anyone could love their own son, was going to take sannyas and disappear. And then he was thinking of the miseries of Sachi Devi and Vishnupriya and everyone else. And Lord Chaitanya ordered Chandrasekhar, you make all the arrangements for the sannyas ceremony. This is selfless love. There was nothing in all of creation he would less rather do. But he did it. Thy will be done. Not my will, but thy will. And he was out begging. Begging for the rice and begging for the cow dung and begging for the wood and begging for the spices. And he had to collect all the ingredients from place to place to place for the whole ceremony, for the yajna, for the rituals, for the feast, for everything. And he did it. And after the ritual was complete and the name was given, it was already evening time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to dance in ecstasy. Everyone else was weeping and crying, and he was dancing in ecstasy. Then he went and he embraced Keshav Bharati Maharaj. And Keshav Bharati Maharaj started dancing in ecstasy. And the two of them danced together with all the other devotees and everyone else in the town practically throughout the entire night. When the sun rose the next morning, Lord Chaitanya told Keshav Bharati, I will go to Vrindavan. And Keshav Bharati said, I'm going with you. And everyone in Katva said, we're all going with you. No one cared. Their homes, their jobs. They left for Vrindavan. This was the power, the magnetic power of Lord Chaitanya's attraction. And they were. Keshav Bharati went first. Mahaprabhu was behind him. Everyone else was behind them. And then in the forest, after some hours, Lord Chaitanya turned and sent everyone back except his intimate associates. According to Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chandrasekhar was sent back to tell the people of Navadvip this message. I have taken sannyas and I've entered into the forest. That's all. Nothing else. Chandrasekhar Acharya now had to give that message. Very special personality in Mahaprabhu's lila. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he made his Chaitanya Mat at the place of the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya. And that's the place where Srila Prabhupada would go and visit him and meet him there. And that's the place of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada's Samadhi in the house of Chandrasekhar Acharya. So they were roaming through the forest,
And Mahaprabhu was so ecstatic on his way to Vrindavan. And it was there that Lord Nityananda Prabhu he saw some cowherd boys. Lord Chaitanya saw these cowherd boys and was so happy because he himself was a cowherd boy. He was showering his love and his affection and his kindness upon these little cowherd boys. And Nityananda Prabhu told, if Swamiji asks you which is the way for the Jamuna, you should show him the way to the Ganga. So the Lord asked, where is Yamuna? See, Nityananda knows the Lord's heart. He knew he would ask this. But he also knew the Lord's heart. Although he wanted to go to Vrindavan more than anything, he wanted to relieve the sufferings of his devotees even more than everything and anything. So the boy, this way. And then Nityananda Prabhu sent messenger, according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, who was also Chandrasekhar, sent a messenger back to Shantipur to inform Advaita of their plan. So Mahaprabhu saw the river. Yamuna, the Yamuna. He began to offer beautiful prayers and glorification of Yamuna. He took his bath. And as he was taking his bath, a boat approached him. And on the boat was Advaita Prabhu. And he was holding a dry kopan and some dry sannyas clothes. And Mahaprabhu said, Advaita, what are you doing in Vrindavan? How did you know I was here? And Advaita was a little mixed up. He said, this is not Yamuna, this is Ganga, Shantipur. And then the Lord understood Nityananda's trick. Nityananda cheated me. And Advaita Prabhu and Nityananda Prabhu would have loving exchanges in the form of debates and fight sometimes, but their love for each other was like inseparable. So Advaita Charya said, actually, no, because what Nityananda Prabhu said is true. Because at Prayag, the Ganga and the Jamuna meet, and from that point, the eastern part is Ganga and the western part is Jamuna of the same river, and because you're bathing on the western side, you are bathing in Yamuna. And as far as Vrindavan, wherever your lotus feet are, that is Vrindavan. So here, take this dry cloth, and I've prepared. I know that you've been fasting for several days. You haven't had any food, so please come to my house. I have some prasad for you. So Mahaprabhu went. And then they called Sachimat and all the devotees of Navadvip to meet them there. And after that very exciting pastime of Nityananda Prabhu and Lord Chaitanya taking prasad together, soon after Sachimat came on a palanquin with all the devotees of Navadvip. But actually, even before that, Vrindavan Das Thakur said, when they were on their way and they were in Fulia, so many of the people of Navadvip heard that he was coming. Hundreds and thousands of people were rushing to see Lord Chaitanya as a sannyasi, to see him again. And it described how they were coming. They became completely oblivious to the material world. They were so fixed in their enthusiasm to see Lord Chaitanya. This is an example of how enthusiasm for devotional service can overcome all obstacles. Shall I tell?
they were going through forests. And some places there were thorns and brambles and all sorts of bushes, and they just ran right through it. And no one got cut and no one got hurt because they just didn't care. And they had to cross a river. And there were boats, and thousands of people just jumped on a single boat within seconds. And the boatman just started going, and halfway through the river, the boat would fall apart, just pieces. And most Bengalis don't know how to swim. But it is explained, they were so enthusiastic to see Lord Chaitanya, they forgot that they didn't know how to swim. And they started swimming. And they swam right to the shore without the slightest inconvenience. And other people, they took empty clay pots and held it like this to float with them and were kicking their legs. Other people took the trunks of banana trees and were holding that. This way, hundreds and thousands of people crossing the river. All to have the darshan of Lord Gauranga. And then ultimately Lord Chaitanya came to Advaita's house from Phuliagram. And when Sachi Mata came, she thought she would never see her son again. The happiness of seeing him was inconceivable. But the sadness of seeing him like that was also inconceivable. Sachi Mata would personally prepare with her own loving motherly hands the finest, most fragrant oils to anoint Lord Chaitanya's hair with. That was one of the deepest loves, pleasures of her life. She would make flower garlands with very small malati flowers to decorate his hair. She would make these fine oils to scent his hair. To see that most lovely shining hair curling around his golden moon-like face was the ultimate pleasure of her life. But now, it was all shaved off. And she would arrange his clothes and his jewels. Those beautiful golden clothes she would arrange for him. And all those jewels were replaced with the robes of a sannyasi. Just very simple, cheap cloth, a kopan, jhadar, that's all. Put in water and rubbed with some red rock. In those days, they didn't have the types of dyes that people usually use today. They just had this natural red rock. They would just put it in the water and dye the clothes. It was unbearable. She looked at him and cried. And the Lord could understand the feelings of her heart. As an example to all living beings, he offered his prostrated obeisances at the feet of his mother. And then he allowed her to embrace him, to place him on her lap. She kissed him and tried to see through the welling tears of her eyes his beautiful moon-like face. Again and again, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu
he expressed his feelings to his mother. Somehow, in madness, I went and took sannyas. Actually, my body belongs to you. Whatever devotion I have is only what I receive from you. Whatever love of God I have is only what I receive from you. You selflessly fed me, bathed me, clothed me, cared for me, loved me for my entire life. And now I've left you? I will do whatever you say. If you want, I will come back home and live with you. Even though she wanted that more than anything in the world, there was one thing she wanted even more than anything in the world. Even more than more. And that's the Lord's pleasure. Yes, if you come home, that would give me great happiness. But then people will criticize you. What is a sannyasi living with his mother like this? So she consulted the other devotees. And they all decided, instead of go to Vrindavan, Sachi Devi said, live in Puri. Because the same Krishna of Vrindavan is in Puri as Lord Jagannath. But it's a close place. And I'll get news of you regularly. Mahaprabhu's innermost dear desire, his longing to go to Vrindavan, he put aside to satisfy his devotee, his mother. Yes, I will go to Puri. Sachi Devi, all these devotees were begging Lord Chaitanya, please let me cook for you. And Sachi Devi said, you may all cook for the Lord in Puri other times, but I may never see him again. So please, devotees, give me this blessing. Let me cook all the meals for my son, Nimai. And they all, Harivo, they were so happy. And Sachi Mata was in charge of all cooking. And everyone was helping. She would just gaze through her tear-filled eyes as Nimai would be eating her prasad. By Advaita's request, the Lord stayed for more days. And Nityananda and Mahaprabhu and all the devotees danced and chanted and talked about Krishna and ate prasad practically continuously. And then the Lord said, I will go to Puri. And the devotee said, it's not a good time to go to Puri. Because the countries between Shantipur and Orissa are at war with each other. It's very, very dangerous. There are too many obstacles. You should wait for some time. Till the political situation improves, then you can go. And Mahaprabhu called out very emphatically, when will there ever be a time when there is no obstacles? I will go now. And Advaitacharya, hearing that, became very enthusiastic. He said, yes. He said, what obstacle could stop you? In fact, all obstacles on the path are your servants. Now we can understand that all obstacles on our path are the servants of the Lord. And the purpose of the servant is to serve the purpose of the master. Vipadashanduta shashvatatratatra jagat guru. Queen Kunti prayed like this, let these obstacles and calamities come again and again. Because in them I have to take shelter of you. The obstacles that come in our life help us to deeply take shelter of the Lord in the core of our hearts. The obstacles in our life help us to become detached from the addiction of thinking I am the doer, I am the controller, I am the proprietor. The obstacles that come in our life humble us
And so many times the obstacles on the path pave the roads to opportunities that we have never seen before, whatever they may be, however inconceivable they may appear, because they are all the servants of the Lord helping us to come to Him. So the Lord left Shantipur, and everyone went with Him toward Puri. Advaita Charya and all the devotees, they all just evacuated whatever they knew. And after some time, the Lord told everyone to return. And He said to Advaita, if you don't return, nobody else will return. As the Lord left, they were all fainting, unconscious. And Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat explains at that point, when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was leaving Shantipur for Puri, all His devotees, Sachi Devi, Advaita Prabhu, Haridas, everyone, they were all falling unconscious, weeping. It was unbearable. It was the exact identical scene as when Akrura took Krishna out of Vrindavan. Same emotions of separation, the Lord's being taken away. They didn't know if they would ever see Him again. Hope against hope. Just see the Sambhog and Vipralamba. First the Lord breaks the news to them that He would take sannyas, and they were cast in this ocean of Vipralamba separation. Then He had kirtan with them and was giving them garlands and speaking sweet joking words, and they just felt He'll never leave. And then He left. So Sambhog, and then again. And then He's gone. And they're about to end their lives. And they hear this voice that He'll see you again. And then they're with Him again. What joy, dancing and chanting with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Advaita Bhavan in Shantipur. And then He leaves them. And they don't know what their destiny will be. And the fact is, none of them saw Him again for years. So here the Lord Himself and was sharing with His devotees these feelings of meetings and separation. And the Akrura Leela was reenacted in Shantipur as Mahaprabhu left. And they were all falling in the ground, helpless to stop Him. And He and His associates, they came to Aritagram. And there was a devotee named Ananta Pandit, who was a great Vaishnav. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was invited to his house. And all night long, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just spoke Krishna Katha to Ananta Pandit, because he was so eager to hear. And in the morning he left. They traveled on to a place where the Ganges, there are many different streams. And the name of this place, so what was the name of it? Chattabog or something like that. But this particular place, it's very famous because Lord Shiva appears there in the form of water. There's a water lingam there. And the history is that after Bhagirathi, Maharaj Bhagirath, took the Ganga to the earth and it was flowing down, Lord Shiva was feeling so deep separation from Mother Ganga, he wanted to worship her. So he came to that particular place. And he went to bathe in the Ganga, and in the ecstasy, he offered his life to the Ganga, and his body turned into water and merged with the Ganga.
And the Ganga was worshiping Shiva, and Shiva was worshiping the Ganga. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bathed in that place. And then there was a governor. He was actually a devotee, but he was very addicted to sense gratification. His name was Ramchandra Khan. And Lord Chaitanya, after taking his bath and honoring Lord Shiva, he was feeling such anticipation to have the darshan of Jagannath. Understand this. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, from the moment he was told to go to Puri, the focus of his whole heart was separation from Lord Jagannath. He was meditating on Jagannath. He was crying for Jagannath. Thinking of Jagannath, he was sitting on the bank of the Ganges, weeping and weeping in such a pathetic sounding way that this Ramchandra Khan, he was on a palanquin being carried by his servants, and he heard this weeping, and he looked over and saw Lord Chaitanya crying and crying. His heart totally melted. He went over, you know, what can I do for this sannyasi? I'll do anything for this sannyasi. I can't bear seeing him in this state. What can I do? And Lord Chaitanya said, who are you? And he said, I'm the servant of the servant of your servants. I just want to serve you. I'll do anything for you. I'm the governor. I have power. I'll do anything for you. And Lord Chaitanya said, take me to see Lord Jagannath in Puri. Show me the way and help me get there. That's the only alms he wanted. Ramchandra Khan said, come to my house for prasad first. And he gave him prasad. And he said, this is the worst time to go to Puri. Up until the border of Orissa, which is a long direction, there's wars being fought. And the enemy kings, they've planted tridents and all sorts of other, you know, sabotaging ways of killing people. You go through the forest, there's tridents sticking up, hidden in the bushes. And not only that, there's these enemy soldiers. And anyone who they don't know who comes, they immediately accept to be a spy of the enemy camp. And they capture you, they prison you, and they torture you. That's what they will do to everyone. And how not to be caught by them? The military's everywhere. And besides the military, because of the war, there's all kinds of dacoits who will rob and kill any pilgrim coming by. Nobody will dare traveling through this tract of land at this time. But still, because you've given me this order, with all my armies and myself personally, I'll try to get you there. So late at night, Ramchandra Khan arranged a boat to take the Lord on the river. And the boatman, he said, be absolutely quiet. Don't say a word. Because his life was at stake too. And Lord Chaitanya told Mukunda, Nam Kirtan. And Mukunda was chanting, and Mahaprabhu was chanting and dancing on the boat, and all the devotees were chanting ecstatically, and the boatman was not ecstatic at all. He said, stop, stop, stop this kirtan, stop now, stop. So they stopped. He said, be quiet. I know this area. Where we are now, it is in infested with deadly, man-eating Bengali tigers. And tigers swim.
They could swim and come right up to the boat and climb on and eat us. And in the water, this area is infested with deadly man-eating crocodiles. And they have such force they could capsize our boat and eat us. And not only that, but there are thieves and there are robbers and there are pirates with boats. And there are enemy armies with weapons. If they hear you, they'll kill us. There's no doubt. So be quiet. Be quiet. Be quiet. Mahaprabhu heard every word he said. And with a loud, thunderous voice, he said, Kirtan! He said, as long as we are chanting the holy names with pure devotion, the Sudarshan Chakra is in front of our boat, behind the boat, and on all sides of the boat to protect us. Krishna will always protect those devotees who sincerely take shelter of his holy name. We have nothing to fear, Mukunda, Kirtan. And instantly, without the slightest hesitation, Mukunda, with a very sweet voice, chanted very loudly the holy names, and all the devotees again were chanting. And by that time, even the boatman was fearless. And they went to the Orissan border, where everything was then safe. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu he came to a place called Jaleshwar. There is a famous temple of Lord Shiva. And Lord Chaitanya was praying to Lord Shiva that he said, whoever offends Lord Shiva offends Krishna. He was very, very strong. Actually, I'm going to go back a little. No, I'll go back tonight. I'm sorry. Tonight's lecture. And he was glorifying Lord Shiva. How every devotee, every Vaishnav, will give all honor and respect to Shiva as the greatest of all Vaishnavas, the greatest devotee. And they came to Bhuvaneshwar. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, seeing Lord Shiva in Bhuvaneshwar, began to dance in ecstatic love for the pleasure of Shiva. And it explains the reciprocation of love in this instance. That Lord Shiva is a devotee of Krishna. When he does kirtan of Krishna's holy names, he dances with such love that all his clothes falls off and he doesn't even know it. But because Shiva is always dancing for the pleasure of Krishna, here Krishna in the form of Lord Chaitanya was dancing for the pleasure of Shiva. The Shiva Lingam. And Vrindavan Das Thakur explains the history of Bhuvaneshwar. Should I tell? Lord Shiva was living in Kailash for a long time with Parvati. And he left there to come down to Varanasi to reside for some time. It became the divine city of Lord Shiva. And while he was living in Varanasi, there was a king called Kashiraj. Now this Kashiraj, he had all these benedictions of Lord Shiva. He was a devotee of Shiva, and he became very proud. And he considered Krishna, who was living in Dwarka, to be his enemy. So he decided he wanted to fight in battle against Krishna to defeat him and conquer all of Krishna's wealth. So he did puja to Lord Shiva. And Shankar Bhagavan appeared to him. He said, "What benediction do you want?" He said, "I want to fight against Krishna, and I want you to fight in my army with me to defeat him." Lord Shiva said, "All right. You march against Krishna, and I'll be with you with all of my people." So he marched against Krishna. And he attacked. And Krishna took his Sudarshan Chakra and annihilated Kashiraj's entire army. Then, with his Sudarshan Chakra, he severed Kashiraj's head. That was the end of him. So much for Lord Shiva's fighting with him. And then Sudarshan Chakra was sent to Varanasi to burn down the whole city. Now this is Shiva's city where him and Parvati were enjoying like anything. So then in order to protect Varanasi, Lord Shiva began to fight Krishna. And he sent the Pashupati weapon, which is very cold. I mean, very hot, I don't know. But he sent the Pashupati weapon, which is very hot, yes? But then Krishna sent the Narayan Astra weapon, which is very cold. And Prabhupada says that when there's intense heat, that is austerity. But when there's intense cold, that is misery. Very well. Everything stops. So Sudarshan Chakra then went toward Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva started running away, just like Durvasa Muni. But when he realized there was nowhere he could go to hide from Sudarshan, Lord Shiva came back to Krishna and fell at his feet and surrendered his life. And he said, "Krishna, I'm your devotee. I'm surrendered to you. The only reason I fought with Kashiraja was because it was your desire." He said, "You're like the wind, and I'm like, your desire is like the wind, and I'm like a leaf that's just blown whichever way your desire blows me, and you blew me to do this. It's not my fault. You made me do this. Your independent sweet will is the ultimate controlling factor of your devotees, and I'm your devotee. So, but still, I made an offense. I sided with your enemy and I fought against you and I beg forgiveness. Please forgive my offense." He was crying. And Krishna looked at him and smiled and spoke with anger. This is Krishna's mystical nature. He could smile and be angry. And, oh, when Krishna wants to purify his devotee, he's the master of all masters. He said to Shiva, "No one in the entire world hates me more than you. You know my glories. You know who I am, you're my devotee, and still you took the side with my enemy and fought against me to conquer my city of Dwarka? No one in the whole world hates me more than you." What an arrow that was in the very core of the heart of Lord Shiva to hear those words. And he prayed, "Because I'm with all these bad people all the time, bad associations." I get affected by this false ego. And because of that, I did that. I made such an offense. Please, I need to be near you. I want to be with you. Please protect me by keeping me always close to you. Krishna was very pleased by Lord Shiva. He said, there is a place in South India. He didn't say South India because it wasn't called India then. Ministry can edit that part out of the tape. He said, there is a place south of here called Ekamravan. And it is a beautiful, divine place. In fact, it is as beautiful and nice as Varanasi, but in the south. And then he began to explain the wonderful qualities. And he said, that will be your residence. He said, and very close by, just on the shore of the sea, is a blue mountain. And close by to that is a banyan tree. And there I am eternally residing as Lord Jagannath in Puri. So as I am always in Puri, I grant you eternal residence just close by in Ekamravan. And because you will reside there, it will be known as Bhuvaneshwar. And we will always be close together. Now today, for those who have been there, it's a very special place because in the main Bhuvaneshwar temple, there is a deity of Krishna. Yes, Jagannath? Krishna. And all the bhoga is first offered to Krishna and then the Mahaprasad is offered to Bhuvaneshwar Shiva. Honoring Shiva's ultimate desire to always take Krishna's prasad. So yes, there, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, remembering this beautiful leela between Krishna and Shiva, he danced in great ecstasy for the pleasure of Lord Shiva in Bhuvaneshwar temple. Then he continued his journey. Should we end here? It's now 12:30, and Aarti is about to begin, and none of you have had breakfast. How many of you have had breakfast today? How many have not had breakfast today? I feel very guilty. What can I say? But if it makes you feel any better, I also have not had breakfast. So we will continue this evening. What time is evening? 7 o'clock. We'll continue discussing these transcendental subjects at 7 o'clock this evening. And we'll end early this evening because tomorrow's Gaur Purnima and we would like you all to have nice rest. So please do try to be here by 7 o'clock. And the aarti is about to begin. Mm-hmm.